Hello everyone, you're listening to J Movie Talk, episode 90, as I'll be talking Jurassic World, The Fallen Kingdom.
So now we've got genetic power, so how long is it going to take for that to spread around the globe? And what's going to be done with it? It ain't going to stop with the de-extinction of the dinosaurs.
I'm not sure I know what you're talking about.
I'm talking about man-made cataclysmic change.
What kind of change?
Change is like death. You don't know what it looks like until you're standing at the gates.
Hey, what's going on, everyone? I'm back. Been kind of taking a little bit of a hiatus, a little bit. I know I'm supposed to be doing the whole Texas Chainsaw Massacre franchise, which I'm still doing. But I just kind of been a little slow to actually get it all done, actually. But I will still be doing those films. But around this time of the year, things happen and basically work happens. So I've been a little slow with that, but I am giving you guys an episode here of a fairly recent movie, a little movie called Jurassic World: The Fallen Kingdom, or just Fallen Kingdom. Perhaps you heard of it or whatnot. It is the fifth movie, I believe, in the Jurassic Park slash World franchise, and everything like that. The second starring, of course, Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard, and everything. But speaking of that, kind of go into the cast a little bit here. So I already mentioned Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard are returning from the first film as Owen and Claire. And then the rest of the cast here, we have Rafe Sproul, however you pronounce it, I'm sorry, words are hard, names are hard sometimes, as Eli, Justice Smith as Franklin, Danielle Pandia as Zaya. I'm all messing these people's names up, I apologize. James Cromwell, the distinguished James Cromwell. I don't think he's a sir, but I would say Sir James Cromwell, because he feels like he should be a sir. But as Benjamin Lockwood, Toby Jones has a small role here as Mr. Eversall. Ted Buffalo Bill Levine shows up here as Ken Wheatley. Jeff Goldblum makes a return as Ian Malcolm. B.D. Wong returns as well as Dr. Wu. And that's pretty much it. As far as what I'm going to talk about as far as the main cast or whatnot. But I'll save one cast member for later when I just talk about them in particular. So that's your cast or whatnot. And get into how this movie opens. After seeing all of the Jurassic movies now, I think this might actually be my favorite of the openings. The first Jurassic Park movie opening is still iconic because you didn't know exactly what you were dealing with and how that whole thing played out with the soldiers and the guy getting attacked by the raptor and everything, and you don't really see it. It's almost reminiscent of Jaws in a way, but you only see like the eye and everything. It's still a classic, iconic type of, okay, what exactly are we dealing with here? Opening. Whereas here, we know exactly what we're dealing with, but the difference is that the movie opens in a way that you thinking it's going to go one way, but things quickly get completely out of hand because we are returned back to the island and we're with these two guys that's in like a submersible or whatnot. And they're trying to extract some DNA from the Indominus Rex from the previous film, which we know was killed by the giant whale-like dinosaur, which I, for this episode, we'll refer to it as the Whale Rex, because it's not actually, of course it's not a T-Rex, but it's like a whale, but it's definitely a lot bigger than a whale. or whatnot. So for this episode, because I don't know the exact name of the dinosaur or whatnot. So for the purposes of this episode, I'll just refer to it as Whale Rex. You know, at the end of the last film, it basically grabbed Indominus Rex and dragged it to the depths of its whirlpool and everything like that. So here, a few years later, we see the remains, the bones of the Indominus Rex that's laying at the bottom of this whirlpool that this whale Rex has been living in. And there we find that they're trying to extract the DNA from it, which they do. They just get a piece of bone. That's all they really needed for the DNA of this creature. And they sending it back up to the surface. And, you know, of course, it would not be a Jurassic movie if there's not some type of a catastrophic storm or whatnot that's happening. Because for some reason, wherever these islands are, you know, they're always hit by tsunamis or bad storms or whatnot. So the so they extract the bone and get it back to the surface, and the group that's there to get it, you know, the helicopter flies over, they find the buoy and they get it, and it once again is kind of reminiscent of Jaws, and it kind of reminded me a bit of Jaws 3 with the whole submersible and going into an area and you see the light from the submersible as it's going along, and then all of a sudden the light goes out and it's like, okay, what the hell? Because we do see the shadow of Whale Rex as it's swimming around there, because apparently this thing hasn't, they didn't get it out or whatnot. I mean, it's still there. And so we assume that, you know, it's basically it killed these guys down there. We don't get to see exactly what happened, but we just know they're dead. And the rest of the team, they're like, okay, we're trying to get out of here. And there's this one poor guy who is like a lab tech type whatnot. And I guess he was keeping the power on to the gate and everything. And he's out there, and, you know, the helicopter's getting ready to take off, and they let him know, like, hey, let's get the hell out of here. And in the shadows, and I'll come back to this again as I'm talking about this, but this is one of the few instances of the movie of what I really like and kind of helped add the suspense, because the helicopter team is trying to yell to him, like, hey, come on, come on, come on. And then they see it, but he doesn't. And as they zoom out, we see the T-Rex, you know, the infamous T-Rex who just will not die, is in the background slowly coming towards him. And then when he realizes that the T-Rex is after him, he starts hauling ass trying to get to the helicopter, and T-Rex chases him down, and he manages to get to the helicopter. Of course, they've already taken off a bit, and they have the ladder, and he's hanging on to it, kind of like a Jack Nicholson Joker and Batman hanging onto the ladder. And T-Rex grabs a hold of the ladder and is like not gonna let this thing go, because he wants some meat and he sees food or whatnot. So there's this whole big kind of intense moment here, and the guys in the helicopter like, we gotta cut him loose. It sucks we gotta do this, but it's either him or us, and well, it's not gonna be us type of thing. And you know, he's hanging off for dear life, and he's yelling at them not to cut it, not to cut it. And then the T-Rex actually just lets go of the ladder, and the guy's like, yes, he's so excited, he's happy he lives, and they're flying over the water, and you're thinking everything is great, and then out of nowhere, the freaking Whale Rex comes up and just eats this dude. And it's a great visual scene to see it, and like I say, that's one reason why I really enjoyed the opening to this movie, because of that. And it just felt like it's fun, but it's also very tense and very, it grabs you right away, I should say, and everything. Let's see here. The next thing I want to refer to is that we're introduced to Claire, who, of course, is not working for the park anymore. She's more so doing like, I don't want to say like pro bono work, but she's still with a small group of people who's trying to basically save the dinosaurs that's still left on the island, because we find out that the volcano that's on the island has been very active and could blow at any moment. And if it does, that it will wipe out all of the dinos that's on the island, basically killing off all the dinosaurs that still exist in the world. And she's working with this small group of young people who are, you know, desperately trying to get, you know, the government and political figures to, you know, do something about this, you know, to help keep the advancement of this species, you know, this group of species alive and everything from going extinct again. And which is a complete shift from what we saw of Claire in the first movie. But we know by the end of the first movie that she was not the cold, you know, type of disinterested person that she was. It was nice to see that she cared more about the dinosaurs, you know, and everything, whereas before she just looked at them as just, you know, profit. It was just profit. It was all for business and everything. But here, you know, the whole importance of them was her main concern, and I like how they did that with her character. So we get where we see Jeff Goldblum is at like a hearing or something, that's trying to, you know, plead their cases. People trying to plead their cases, and Ian Malcolm is one of the people there that's trying to plead the case about the dinos. And he says some interesting things, and it's like, okay, you're not the same Ian Malcolm that we remember, because he was always the one that wants to preserve the life he feels that they, you know, deserve to live, and this, that, and the other. Now, I mean, even the second movie, he kind of started to change his view, but still he looked at it as that dinos deserve to live and everything like that. But I don't know, maybe because time has gone by and something like that, and he's an older man now, but he didn't seem like the same Ian Malcolm that we all remember from at least the first two movies, and everything. And I'll come back to his character later on as well. But at the last minute, Claire is called in by Eli Mills, who works for Hammond's old partner of Brandon Lockwood. And basically he has, you know, got to go ahead to get all the dinosaurs off, to bring them to a better preserve and everything like this. And he wants Claire to go back in because she worked on the island, so she knows the ins and outs of the island, to go in with the team that he has to extract 11 species of dinosaurs to bring them out. And the only thing is that she has to get Owen to go along with him, because we find out that Blue is still alive. You know, the only velociraptor that's survived from the first one. Blue is still alive out there, but of course, only Owen has the connection to Blue to really able to bring her in or whatnot. So Claire's like, me and Owen hasn't really been talking, but okay, I guess I'll try to go and talk some sense and bring him back in. And she goes to find him, who he's basically living off the grid or whatnot and building his own home and everything. And she goes and she sees him like, hey, Owen, yeah, you want to catch up or whatnot? And I kind of thought it was interesting that them coming back together so quickly and everything, there's never any, like in most movies where, especially like a sequel or something, or even if it takes place like events before where people were together, but by the time we see them in the movie, they have like a little animosity towards each other and just kind of a bunch of back and forth between them. And then by the end, they're kind of either, you know, back on really, really great terms, and makes their relationship even stronger. Kind of similar to, Bill Paxton and Helen Hunt and Twister, like how they were in that movie in the beginning, and then by the end of it, you know, they are back together or whatnot. But it takes the whole course of the movie for that to kind of happen and everything, where with Claire and Owen, I felt like there was none of that here. But I will say that Chris Pratt and Bryce Dallas Howard's chemistry is a lot stronger in this movie than it was in the first. You could tell that they were having fun making this movie. Not saying they didn't in the first one, but you could feel like they were a lot more comfortable as far as being your leads and everything together, and the chemistry was a lot stronger between them opposed to the first movie, where you get a lot of that more so in the first movie, where here, when they've supposed to already been through a relationship and they went through some traumatic stuff with what happened at the park in the first movie, but here we don't get that, whereas it's almost like it was the reverse, where in the first movie, like if you'd have had their chemistry in the first movie or the character dynamics in the first movie with them put in this movie, I think it would have played better. But we don't get it. It's more like, hey, we haven't seen each other in a while. Let's team back up. Yeah, we're going to do something great. All right, cool. But whatnot. That's kind of how it felt here with them two. And I don't know, maybe because Bryce Dallas Howard really enjoys being around Chris Pratt, because even in interviews, you can tell that she really, like, they're really good friends now. And maybe that's what it was. I don't know. But I just didn't feel like there was any of that, you know, kind of tension between them that necessarily needed to be in this movie, at least in my opinion, or whatnot. So the biggest thing that happened here, is that, like I say, so they go to the island. It's Claire along with some of her team, from her group that she's been working with. Justice Smith, like I mentioned, who plays Franklin, and Danielle Pendea, who plays Zaya Rodriguez. They go in along with Owen to the island, and they meet up with this extraction group led by good old Buffalo Bill himself, Ted Levine. And it's like, okay, yeah, we're going in, we're going to do this thing, you know, or whatnot. You know, everything is all good because it's all for the greater good or whatnot. And as they're there, and we quickly find out that Ted Levine and these guys are not the good guys that we thought they were, and they completely double cross Owen and Claire, and basically leave Owen for dead in a sense in one scene when they was trying to get Blue back. And we realize that these people are not good, and there's this whole mad dash to basically, one, get off the island because the freaking volcano is exploding, but also two, you really want to, it's like to survive. And I will say this, the way this whole thing plays out, where Claire and Franklin are trapped inside of a lab, and this dinosaur makes his way inside. Once again, it's playing with shadows and like small amounts of light, similar to like the beginning with the T-Rex. I really enjoyed those aspects where they're not showing you the dinosaur, at least the terror dinosaurs right off the bat. It's like shadows and small glimpses of seeing them, and then bam, you get to see them before. I really like how they did that with this movie. Because even in the other movies, I would say, other than like how they did with the build up tension to when you first see the T-Rex or whatnot, other than that, you know, we get to see the dinosaurs kind of like off the bat, especially in the sequels. It's like, okay, bam, we're not even hiding what these things are, you know, what this potentially could be or whatnot. But here it kind of goes back to the first movie where the tension is built up with seeing exactly what dinosaurs are the threats here. I mean, of course, no, yeah. The brontosauruses and, you know, different, the more civil dinosaurs are not the ones that you want to keep in the shadows and whatnot, but the ones that are the threats. So you kind of build that up, and I like how they did that with this movie. So you have this whole tense moment with Claire and Franklin trapped trying to get away from the dinosaur, but then because the lava is seeping in, you have that whole threat and them trying to get out amidst with this dinosaur as well. It's a really good sequence as well. And then Owen, who and narrowly escaped being burned up by a volcano, the lava and everything. And they basically tease Chris Pratt as being Indiana Jones once again. Now, I haven't really done too much research to see if it's official that he will at some point be Indiana Jones, but with both Jurassic World movies, they have teased him being Indiana Jones, and like in the first movie with the whole shadow, and then you see him, and then in this movie, of course, with the dinosaurs running for their lives, and he comes running through, and basically, I mean, it's like Harrison Ford in Raiders of the Lost Ark, and they're all running for their life and everything. I will say that this was a very tense scene and very sad scene too, because you got these dinosaurs that's running for their lives, and it is making you think that was it possible like this when they were all wiped out, billions of years ago? Was it like them trying to run for their lives to, find shelter, but there was no shelter because their world was coming to an end, and they all basically was wiped out, right? But I kind of always thought that's what the scene kind of represented in a way. But it is a great scene with them running, and then one of those little pods, makes an appearance again, that from the, just like in the first movie, just sitting there, and conveniently is there, and Franklin and Claire gets in, and of course Owen, he's trapped outside with the dinosaurs as the volcano is erupting, and they just stampeding all over the place, and they're stampeding toward a cliff. They basically run into their deaths in a way, which is even sadder in a way too. Like I say, I don't know if they did that on purpose, but just watching it, when you see it, it's like they basically ran. It was either die by lava or die by jumping over a cliff, because I mean these animals can't swim for the most part, so by jumping in the water they're gonna sink because they're too heavy and there's nowhere to go really, so they just jump into their depths in a way. And where that plays out with Claire and Franklin trapped inside the pod, and Owen is the hero and they all live, but they manage to get to the ship that's leaving, and the image of the brontosaurus that's like sitting on the edge of the water, as it's like he's sad and the smoke is coming because the lava is vastly coming towards him, and they just watch it, this silhouette is in the shadow of the smoke, and he kind of stands up and you hear him roar out in pain. It's a very sad scene. I don't know what it is, but it just felt very sad when watching that scene, how it unfolded. And I won't say that I was gonna cry, but I think there was a chance that possibly someone in there probably cried watching that, because it is a very sad scene. But anyway, so moving on to like I say, Ted Levine and his team were not the nicest people in the world, because they were hired by this Eli fellow who works for Lockwood now, because apparently Lockwood has now, because the billionaire who actually owned Jurassic Park, and this is why I got confused about something, because it's never made clear. Now, it was made clear in the first movie that the billionaire, guy who owned the park, he owned it, he bought it from Hammond and everything, so he took it over like that. Now, Lockwood, on the other hand, that's why I say, I can't remember if this character was ever mentioned before, and then I have to go back and probably watch the movies, because I don't remember anything about a Lockwood or Hammond having a partner that was named Lockwood or anything like that. But he was a former partner who helped create, Jurassic Park and everything, create the dinosaurs and this, that, and that. But now they are trying to preserve the life of the dinosaurs, but we find out that Eli basically is doing some shady business and everything like this, because he wants to sell them off on the black market to any and to the highest bidders and stuff like this. And I feel like Eli might be the worst of the human villains of the series, because I mean, right off the bat, and I mean, I know I have some English or British listeners to the show, but I think even you guys will get what I'm going with. This is that when he first shows up and with the British accent and he's in his little shark suit, it's like this guy has not good guy written all over him. you know right off the bat that he's not a good guy, even though he tries to portray himself as a stand-up good guy. And when he introduces himself to Claire, it's like, oh, Claire, you probably don't remember me, blah, blah, blah. Da, 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 we met 9 years ago, blah, blah, blah. You know, they're trying to butter her up and this, that, and that. But right off the bat, you know this dude is not good. You know he's not a good guy. And I felt like they hid the fact that he was not a good guy terribly. Because, like I say, he just has douchebag written on his face. And when it's revealed that, oh, he's not the great guy, it's because of the fact that Lockwood has a granddaughter, because her mother died. The girl name is Maisie, but her mother had died in a car accident, I believe, before the events of the movie. And she's basically been raised by her grandfather, who is sick and everything, but she has a caretaker who actually raised her mother as well. So this whole thing, and they kept referencing back to her mother a lot. It's like, well, is her, well, okay, why are we doing this? Is her mother supposed to be someone that we know or anything from the previous movies? Because then it would make a whole lot more sense, but it's never done. But her mother keeps getting brought up, and it's like, okay, well, why are we putting so much emphasis on her mother if she wasn't an important type character? I mean, because for a second I wanted to think, like, okay, well, what if they made Julianne Moore's character from part two be her mother, and then, you know, then it would make a little bit more sense to why Maisie has this infatuation with the dinosaurs, because her mother, you know, and everything like that. But we never get that. It's just like, oh, your mother this and your mother that. But it's like, we never get anything in regards to why us as the viewers should care about who her mother was, type of thing. So I felt like it kind of dropped the ball with that. But going back to my original thing, was talking about why Eli is the worst villain, is that when we first get the glimpse that he's not a very good man is when he's on the phone with Ted Levine's character about getting the dinosaurs off the island. Maisie comes in and see him, you know, on the phone, and then he gets very loud and aggressive with her, and it's like, that's when we realize that he's not such a great guy that we thought he was. Like, we didn't need that. I mean, right off the bat, as soon as he walks into the room, we know he's not a good guy. And then, of course, later on in the movie, the things that he does and how he's portrayed, he's like the worst, really. And I mean, I felt like his character was almost unnecessary in a way. I think if the Toby Jones character, Mr. Eversole, was the main bad guy, because I think he plays a good bad guy, so I think if they had him as the main bad guy, it would work better. But the Eli character, I just didn't like him as the bad guy. I felt like he wasn't really a good bad guy. If you want to make him a secondary bad guy, that's fine. But as the main bad guy, main villain, not so much. He didn't do it for me. And speaking of Lockwood, character that James Cromwell plays. Like I said, I'm very confused on it. I've seen all the movies multiple times and everything like this, but I do not remember Lockwood name being mentioned at all. I mean, I'm gonna have to go back and revisit, but I do not remember Lockwood. Like, where did this character come from? Was he just solely created, manifested for this movie to help expand the universe and everything like that? I'm not sure, but where exactly did he come from? I didn't have a problem with James Cromwell's performance. I thought he was good in the role he was given, but I guess they just needed a John Hammond type character, and I guess he was the closest thing to it. So, hey, you got an older guy here who, so apparently was a part of the original, you know, genesis of Jurassic Park. So there we go, and everything. And of course, unfortunately, he gets, you know, taken out halfway through the movie. Surprise, right? I mean, he's a feeble old man in the movie. We kind of knew this was going to happen. And Eli's the one to do it. So, once again, surprise. So, but I was just very confused about the whole Lockwood character. Like, where exactly did he come from? Because I don't remember Lockwood name being mentioned at all. I could be completely wrong, but I just have to go back and watch all the movies to see this or anything. Speaking of characters, Ted Levine, we'll talk about his performance here. I've been a fan of his for a long time, going back to when I was a little kid. I actually liked him as Buffalo Bill in Silence of the Lambs. Yes, I know, not supposed to, but I feel like his performance for some reason gets overshadowed in that movie by Anthony Hopkins as Hannibal Lecter. And because I think if you take out Hannibal in Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill is a very interesting, multi-layered character. And I don't think you really see that a lot with, you know, those types of characters in movies. And not since have you seen a character like him, I don't think. And everything, Ted Levine plays it perfectly. Of course, for the longest, he was always remembered as Buffalo Bill. But I think in more recent memory, he's probably more remembered as Captain Stoudemire from Monk, the TV show, and everything like that. But since Monk is gone, you know, the show is not on anymore, Ted Levine has kind of gotten back into playing not so nice, unsavory type characters. And he does a good job here in his role. You want to see all the bad things happen to him in this movie because of how nasty he is. He has no problem about shooting a dinosaur. He has no problem about even shooting people if it's to get in the way of him getting his money or whatnot. And he just, but he is what he is. Hell, you could have made him the main villain if you really wanted to and everything, but it was good to kind of see him back again playing terrible characters, terrible people, if you will, and everything. Talk about another character, and this one really bothered me. The character of Franklin. Now, I haven't really listened to any other podcasts or read anything about it, so all my thoughts and things like this is just with, just from me witnessing the movie, okay? No preconceived thoughts about it. But I felt like, and this is no disrespect to Justice Smith's performance or anything like that, him as an actor or anything, but I feel like the Franklin character was cringe-worthily bad. Not since probably The Fifth Element with Chris Tucker's Ruby Rod or whatnot, have I watched the movies like it just really cringed anytime the character was on screen. And that's kind of like how it was with Franklin. From the moment we see him on the island, because in the first scene with him in the office with Claire and Zaya or whatnot, we don't get this. But it's once they get to the island and how he starts, like, with the whole sunscreen and everything about, and it's like, is that T-Rex? It's like why do they do this with certain characters, especially the black characters? I have to go there. So, and he being a black person, well, it kind of personally offends me in a lot of ways, right? Because it's like, why? Because he's the only black character that's in this movie. So it's like, why does it have to be the black man that has to be this type of, be this way? And just so scary. And then he's screaming similar to Chris Tucker in The Fifth Element, screaming like a woman. Why do we have to do this? Because it makes it hard to watch. Especially with, like I say, when you have strong characters in these movies, then he has to be the one. Like, why does he have to be the one that's like this? Do we really need a character like that in a movie that's like overtly scary and screaming louder than the women? Because when I say that, I'm talking about the scenes with him and Claire together where they're both screaming and he's screaming louder than her. And it's like, okay, just get him about it. Maybe Franklin should have got. You know, and for me personally, it just felt very offensive to me with how they had him portray his character. Didn't making him the tech guy and everything like that, had no problem with it. Hell, they could have brought back Jake Johnson from the first movie and had him in this as this character. I don't think he would have played it like that or anything. He would have made, you know, like nervous type jokes and things. Like, he could have been like the Vince Vaughn character from Lost World or whatnot. But the way they had the Franklin character portrayed and acted in this movie, it brought the movie down for me in a lot of the scenes that he was in. And fortunately, he's not in a lot of the movie. But unfortunately, he doesn't get killed off either. So, I don't know. I felt like I had to address that. And I didn't think I was ever going to see a character that pissed me off as much as Chris Tucker's Ruby Rod from The Fifth Element for the same type of reasons. But here we are 20 years later, and there we are. We got the new Ruby Rod, if you will. So who knows? Maybe 20 years from now, another character will come along and irk me even worse than Franklin did here. I did like how we got more of Owen and Blue's backstory, and we find out the reason why Owen and Blue were so connected is because he helped raise them, but we find out that Blue was the first one to respond to his commands. And not only was Blue the first to respond to the commands, but Blue was also Blue was the leader of the pack. Blue is the one who got all the others to shape up and listen to what Owen was telling them, and all the others followed Blue's lead. So of course Blue had to live. And I like how they built up more of a backstory between these two, and the relationship with Tim between them two even grew more and everything. I really enjoyed that. And maybe, I don't know, maybe we can see a Owen and Blue solo movie. I doubt that'll happen, but I kind of, when I was watching, I was kind of thinking about that, because it kind of made me think about Rampage with Dwayne Johnson and George in that, and how they were very close. And it kind of made me think about this with, like, the two of them, how close they was. And it made you understand why Owen felt the way he did about Blue and everything, because I guess he looked at his Blue as like his child in a way. So I like how they really did that. Something else I don't understand, and this goes even back to the originals, like, why are these people, and when I say these people, I'm talking about the bad people that's been in the movies, why are they so dead set on this whole dino DNA mixing? Like, you're taking these already vicious animals and bringing them back, but can't stop there. It's like, hey, let's take a T-Rex and a raptor and merge them together, and we got this Indominus Rex. And then it's like, hey, let's get this other dinosaur and a raptor and merge it together and get this new crazy, you know, freak of nature of a dinosaur. And it's like, have these people not learned their lessons from previous tries, attempts and everything? It's like, stop it. Just stop. Stop merging these. Stop, you know, with this whole dino mixing or whatever the hell. Just stop it. Stop with the genetic mix. Because it is clearly how does that benefit you? How does that help you? But at least this time, the reason why they wanted to do it in regards to Blue, because of the fact that Blue is subjective to command, and they wanted to control these things. But just like other, you can't control nature. You can kind of contain it. You can kind of, make sure it doesn't eat you. But even then, it's still a risk. I mean, look at Siegfried and Roy. I mean, they had damn tigers, and then out of Blue, the tiger just attacked Roy. So, you know what I mean? It's one of those type of things. But they need to stop. I mean, and hopefully we'll get away from this whole aspect, because the first movie and now this movie is that's what the whole buildup has been about, this whole genetic mixing and of dinosaurs and this, that, and the other. And that's kind of been the secondary, well, I should say the looming storyline of these last two Jurassic movies, is that This is what the end game is. And once again, Dr. Wu, he lives. He slithers his way up out of there and he lives. So maybe he'll be back in the next one or something like that. And maybe he'll be the main bad guy at that point because he's been around since the very first movie. And he went missing for some time, but then he shows back up in Jurassic World. Now he's back in Fallen Kingdom and everything like that. So who knows? Maybe in the end, he'll be the main bad guy. I don't know. And then talk about Jeff Goldblum. Now, the whole thing was mentioned that, you know, Jeff Goldblum's returning for Fallen Kingdom. You know, he's going to be in it. People are excited because I think he is considered, no, I don't think he's considered, he is the favorite character of the original group. Everyone loved Ian Malcolm and everything. I think people like the first movie and even the second movie, opposed to the third movie with Sam Neill came back for. And I have no problem with Dr. Grant. I would love to see him return for a future Jurassic movie. I'd love to see Sam Neill return as Dr. Grant. But I think people like Jeff Goldblum because it's Goldblum. You know what I mean? He's Jeff Goldblum. Everybody loves Jeff Goldblum or whatnot and everything. But I felt like his return in this movie was wasted. Because he kind of just bookends the movie in a way and gives a monologue about dinosaurs and, you know, we're entering a new world and this, that, and the other. And it's like, well, that's all we get of him? It's like we don't get him with any in action with the dinosaurs at all and everything. Who knows? Maybe they could have him, maybe have the original team of him, Dr. Grant, and Ellie, you know, return in the next movie to go along with Owen and Claire. To, you know, close out the series or something like that. Because I don't think we should go, I don't think they should just churn these movies out. I think you had the original trilogy. I think you should have a second trilogy. And then maybe let the franchise go dormant for a number of years again before you even think about doing another one. I don't think we should, we don't need to get on Star Wars level where we get like a Jurassic Park / World movie like every year or every 2 years. Or like, I don't think we need to do anything like that. But yeah, I felt like Jeff Goldblum's character was wasted, for the most part in this movie. And to close this out, now, for the most part, I enjoyed the movie. There was a lot that I liked about it. There was quite a few things I didn't like, but I think the positives outweighed the negatives for me at least, and everything like that. But as I was watching the movie, I was sitting there, I was like, yeah, this movie seems very familiar to me. Why does it seem familiar to me? It's like, oh, this is Lost World. They basically redid Lost World. That's basically what they did. You have the guy who wants to profit off of the dinosaurs by bringing them to the mainland or whatnot. You have the returning... In this case, you have two characters that return that went through the events of the previous movie in Claire and Owen, where only Goldblum was the returning factor of Lost World. You have you kind of merge the two characters that the T-Rex hunter and the Peter Stormer character from Lost World. You kind of merge those two characters together and get Ted Levine and everything. You have the little girl, just like you had the little girl in the second one. There's a lot of comparisons and similarities of things from Lost World and Fallen Kingdom. And it's just like, oh yeah, a big chunk of it actually takes place not on the island, but instead of the city, it takes place on a mansion compound or whatnot. But there's a lot of similarities between those movies. And that's why I felt like I was watching. I felt like they just kind of redid The Lost World and called it Fallen Kingdom. And that's why it feels very familiar and everything like that. But overall, I enjoyed the movie. I know a lot of reviews haven't been great for it, but it's still an entertaining movie. It's 2 hours, a little over 2 hours long, but it's still an entertaining movie. And that's all you really want out of these Jurassic. You don't want anything that's going to make you sit there and have to overly think and be like, oh, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, and I'm actually looking forward to see, like, okay, the next movie, how will that play out now that you got dinosaurs roaming in, you know, the regular, you know, civilization? Like, how's that gonna work? I mean, you got T-Rex running around, you got Blue running around, you got all these other dinosaurs running around now. So how's that gonna play out, right? So I'm kind of looking forward to see how they go forward with that part of the storyline. But like I said, it's 2 hours. Just enjoy it. Just, you know, don't have to overly think about it, anything like that. If I had to give the movie a rating, I'd probably give it a three. I'd give it a solid three. Like I said, it's good enough. And everything. Favorite character. I think Claire is actually my favorite character in this one, because Owen, he's all right, but I really like Bryce Dallas' performance here. I like her performance here overall more so than I did in the first one. She was good in the first one, but I just feel like she, even though they tried to say that Owen is like the star, but I think Claire is actually really the star. I think Claire is the real star of these movies, the Jurassic World movies. I think Claire is really the lead and everything like that. But yeah, definitely, I recommend checking it out at least once for anyone who hasn't seen it yet. Just check it out and, you know, judge for yourself, really. So that pretty much ends this episode. Thank everyone for listening. You can find me on Twitter at JMovieTalk, where I'm always on there. I'm either commenting on stuff I'm going to be doing, or, you know, comment on other people's stuff about their shows and things like that, and everything. You can also find me on Instagram at GMT Podcast, where I post things about, you know, all the different episodes that I'm doing, and I might throw other stuff in there as well. Also, too, you can follow the Facebook group page, the TV Zone Podcast Network Facebook group page. We're on Facebook, so if you're on Facebook, you can, you know, join the group and join in all the stuff that we're talking about, movie talk related, for Frodo podcast related, also TV Zone podcast stuff that's related as well, and things like that, different movies and TV shows that we're covering and not covering as well. Also, you can find all the episodes on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn Radio, FM Player, pretty much wherever you listen to podcasts, you can find TV Zone Podcast Network, where For Frodo Podcast and J Movie Talk resides as well. And, of course, the home host site, which is the TV Zone Podcast Network.podbean.com. That's TV Zone Podcast Network.podbean.com, where the episodes are uploaded there first. And from there on, you can find us on all the other podcasting apps as well. So I want to thank everyone for listening, and I will be back for episode 91, which should be Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the original 1974 Texas Chainsaw Massacre. If I decide to change that and save that for a later date, I'll probably put up something on Twitter, let everyone know. But for the meantime, episode 91 should be Texas Chainsaw Massacre, 1974. So once again, thank you guys for listening, and I will catch you guys next time. Peace.